My grandmother has said it over and over again. The way that we can grow as a society is through really looking at all of our histories and really coming together and having a more informed, holistic solution that will benefit everybody moving forward. Continuing to go down that very narrow path of what has been traditionally told and traditionally prioritized is only going to continue the ongoing issues.
At Home with Growing Older is a nonprofit organization which believes in peer learning and creating discussions which bring the lens of aging to a variety of topics. At Home with Growing Older is proud to be your host of At Home on Air, a radio hour offering connection, community, and knowledge to our participants remotely. Now, we invite you to listen and learn from this live recorded episode of At Home on Air.
Welcome to At Home on Air. I'm Susie Stadler, an architect by profession, the executive director of At Home with Growing Older, and the producer of this podcast. In our interviews, we explore the meaning of being at home with growing older from two angles: how we can adapt our living environments, including our cities, and how we can continue to cultivate a sense of belonging within our communities and ourselves. These explorations are made possible through the insights of inspiring guests from the arts, architecture, medicine, social services, and beyond, and through comments and questions from you, our listeners. In this fifth episode in our interview series with or about changemakers, people who have made and continue to make a difference in our lives by telling untold stories, thinking differently, and most of all, caring deeply for the well-being of others. I'm excited to welcome our guests, Aljana Wright and Brian Gibble, and my co-host, Taylor Martin. Thank you so much for being here. We are dedicating this episode to the remarkable Betty Reid Soskin, who is turning 104 this year. Thank you, Betty, for showing up for all of us throughout your life. Aljana is the granddaughter of Betty, and Brian is a Bay Area filmmaker and also storyteller. They came together to tell some of Betty's yet untold stories. And they're working on a new documentary called Sign My Name to Freedom. Taylor Martin is our social media strategist. She made this conversation happen, and her family story shares similarities with that of Betty Reid Soskin and other African-American families who came to the Bay Area as part of the Great Migration from the South between 1910 and 1970. So Aljana and Brian, thank you again for being here. Betty takes the role as storyteller really seriously. Her blog, her book, her talks as a park ranger, and now this documentary film project, uncovering her storytelling through songs. How have her stories and also the way she tells them impacted your life and your relationship with her?
Thank you, Susie and Taylor, for having us here on this podcast. Very excited to be here. And to answer your question, storytelling is such a huge part of my relationship with my grandmother. There is a good 75 years between Betty and myself. I think she was about 74, 75 years old when I was born back in 1995. So that 75 years of life was only available to me through story, whether it was from Betty or from other family members. But of course, a majority of my life, I got a very family-friendly version when I was a child. And it wasn't until I became an adult that the full context of her story and by extension, the rest of my family came into my world, not directly from Betty, but through her blog and her ranger talks and later working on this film. And it has been such a a privilege to have this film specifically prompt such important conversations and stories between my grandmother and I. My first task on this film was to review all of the footage that Brian had captured since 2016. And I was able to do that with my grandmother right next to me. And it was so enriching. She and I had talked about how grateful we were to have the opportunity to have those conversations. She was already 101, 102 when I started working on that. And to be able to have those conversations with my grandmother in her hundreds is something that not very many people get to do. And that is not lost on me. So storytelling has been so important for me to get to know her, but also just in terms of her career and how she's been able to mobilize herself as a woman. And I mean, I'm taking that on myself and working in film. That is my medium of storytelling. And I'm very happy and privileged to have such an amazing role model in Betty Reed Soskin.
Thanks, Eliana. What about you, Brian?
First of all, thank you everybody for joining us. It's really exciting to be here. It's an honor to connect with all of you. Thank you for having us on the podcast as well. My life has really become one that revolves and is driven by storytelling. That's everything. I was a journalist before I became a filmmaker. And now as a filmmaker, what I love most is being able to connect with on a really profound level with people that I might not otherwise have connections with. And through storytelling that I draw out of them and that they draw out of me in a mutual way, I've always found that these filmmaking projects are transformative for both of us. And Betty in particular is one of the most gifted storytellers I've ever met. Her ability to communicate verbally is stunning. The reason she became a public figure is her ability to communicate very complex concepts through small stories. And she focuses all of her storytelling that I've ever seen on her or her family's own personal experiences. For a lot of us, it's easy to look at the news and sort of analyze the information that is constantly bombarding us. And then we try to think about how we can interpret that. Betty is brilliant in that she puts all of that through the lens of her own life. And it's something that we can all relate to. It makes a potentially polemic subject, like, say, the role of racial segregation during the home front in World War II, and suddenly disarms it and it takes the spikes off it because she's just talking about what she experienced. And that's something that has informed my work as a filmmaker. This film is a huge project of mine that I feel so committed and compelled to complete, but of course I'm working on a number of other projects as well. And really Betty's helped me to see that focusing on human experiences and first person experiences is the most profound way, I think, to communicate as human beings. So that's been something that has been really transformative for me. And just one other thing quickly that I'll add is that Betty's personal stories about basically a century of history here in the Bay Area, much of which has never been really focused on and looked at, has transformed my relationship to the place where I live. I live in Oakland. I'm from New Mexico, but I've been here for over 15 years now, so it's definitely home. And sadly, we've almost always learned the least about the places where we're actually from. We learn global history and national history, but we won't usually learn a huge amount about our city and certainly not our neighborhoods. And Betty has really been able to show me the way that this city, this region has transformed over time, which I think has changed the way that I look at a lot of the social issues and a lot of the challenges or successes that we're seeing in this part of the world. So I'm so thankful for that and excited to be able to communicate much of that through the film.
I'm sitting with both of your responses and I'm like, where do I even start? But one theme I heard was this unearthing of sorts, or this individual discovery each of you had separately. You, Aliana, met your grandma through lived and documented stories that heightens the importance of saving them. And then Brian, you also speak to the importance of, you know, what that meant uncovering on a micro level with yourself, on a macro level where you live. But, you know, as we get into and have learned about Betty's life and the theme of this episode, the multi-hyphenate spirit, all the hyphens, she was an artist, she was an activist, she was a business owner. I want to ask you, Brian, and Aliana, you could follow up as well. Do you remember the exact moment you heard Betty's music, kind of what this documentary was themed about, and namely with this unearthing of stories, what went through your mind when you unearthed that red plastic bin that you speak of with all of her music and how that was stored and what it's made today?
That's a great question. Yeah, so I started working on this film as a short documentary about Reed's Records, which is a record store, black-owned record store that Betty and her late husband Mel started in 1945. Betty posted on her blog an article from the East Bay Express from 1989 with a journalist talking about how this record store was the first black-owned record store west of the Mississippi, and that it had a huge influence on culture in the Bay Area. And I had heard Betty speak as a park ranger and was immediately enraptured by the story she told, but I didn't hear anything about Reed's Records. Finding this on her blog and learning that that store was still open, I went down to the store and met her daughter, who was running the store, who later introduced me to Betty. And I had been working on that film for probably 4 or 5 months. It was a film about the store, but also about the family. So it's a deeply personal story. And it wasn't until about 5 months in, when I was in Betty's office, we had spent countless hours just talking and getting to know each other, so I could really be sure that I could craft a story that would be authentic to her. So I generally try to spend much, much more time without the camera rolling than with it rolling when I make a film that's personal in nature. So we were in her office one day going through old photos, and I found a photo of her holding a guitar in one of her photo books and asked her about it. And she said she had played music for a period and that it was something that was in the past, but she asked if I'd like to hear any of it. And of course, I wanted to hear some of her music, so she dug out an old homemade CD that was like a demo that she had copied from another tape that came from another tape, sort of a chain, pulled it out of a pile, put it on. And the first song that came on was a song called Ebony the Night, which now I love dearly, and everybody that's heard it has fallen in love with that song. And I was just completely taken aback and stunned. It was a lot to process because I had already admired Betty so much for her talent as a storyteller, and then suddenly I'm hearing this music that felt to me like one of the really great songwriters from one of the golden ages of American music that had never been discovered, but that was sitting right in front of all of us, right? She's a public figure, she's a celebrity, and yet there's this side to her that is even more hidden, for instance, from public view than the record store that she started. So there were about 4 or 5 songs on that CD. Afterwards, she said there's something that I might want to see that might be of use to me. She wasn't sure. And she goes into the hallway, and I hear her rummaging through her closet. And she comes back with a red plastic bin and opens it up. And there are dozens of old reel-to-reel format tapes in there. Some in disarray, some look like they're in good condition. And she said those are recordings that she'd made over more than 10 years when she was working as a singer-songwriter in the Bay Area. And she'd long ago gotten rid of the reel-to-reel player. She hadn't listened to those tapes in literally decades, most of them since she recorded them. I think one of her children copied a few of the songs from one of the tapes years ago, which is how she had the homemade CD that she played for me. And so I was able to get them digitized and found a collection of more than 20 original songs, many of which with multiple versions of those songs. Some of which were performed live, where she would introduce with stories what the songs were about. And the songs are all originals. They're all autobiographical of Betty processing what she was experiencing during the 50s and the 1960s. And music became her outlet during a very turbulent time. And so that became the backbone of the film. It gave me an incredible, unique opportunity to tell this woman's story through her music, which is in itself an autobiographical reflection on her life. We can talk more about the songs and where they came from in her life and what they're about as we continue to move forward.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Aliona, with your lived experiences, learning about your grandma as you go and as you're, sitting next to her, unpacking a lot of this amazing content that was filmed and documented, there's a theme here I'm hearing as well. Just because the world hadn't seen it yet doesn't mean that it's not real. People say these days, if you didn't post it, it wasn't real. But with you, Aliona, how does that sit with you after seeing Betty's stories unfold in this lived experience with Brian, with the team, and with this trove of music to supplement?
I mean, I guess first and foremost is using your example, just because it wasn't posted doesn't mean it wasn't real. this whole experience still highlights the importance of sharing that experience with somebody else, because otherwise it ends with you. That red bin of reel-to-reel tapes that Brian took it upon himself to digitize. As a family, the Reeds, we have so much analog recordings of stuff that just kind of collect us. Some of them we have lost, but there are parts of it that have lived through sharing, through story, or like actually going in and recovering those artifacts. But if my grandmother hadn't shared with Brian, the recordings that she had probably would have been limited to the CD that he had referenced that my cousin actually had made, which only had about half of the songs that Brian had uncovered. And to go further with that, there are stories that I hadn't heard of, that my family hadn't heard of until Brian had asked those questions of my grandmother. You know, history, yes, it happens, but a record of it is important if you want that legacy to live on. I feel heavily passionate about that now moving forward. There are family photos that a lot of my living relatives don't know who are in those family photos. Now it's prompting us to, like, oh, we need to write names on the back of these and ask grandma while she's still here who these people were, and making sure that that lives on. I mean, that was the whole purpose of her starting a blog, really. She started in the early 2000s. Me and my younger sister, we were just little children. She wanted a record of herself that her grandchildren and grandchildren's children can have. And it's not just of her stories, she has our family's history on there. Posting on social media is one thing, but sharing history and recording that, we all know how the game of telephone works. Like, just sitting down with any of your elders and pulling out that iPhone recording app, even if the conversation in the moment doesn't feel like there's a whole lot there, it'll be so invaluable a few years later.
Oh, yeah, I relate. I will definitely be the heralded family historian with my 10,000 pictures and videos in my camera roll. But Brian and you all had mentioned, you know, when she wrote, it was like you were watching something on TV. She orated beautifully. Her art was essentially a form of storytelling as well as this historic preservation, right? What I'm hearing and what I am taking away as well, storytelling is beyond just for mere entertainment, but for the culture and the larger society. How do you all feel about the importance of storytelling?
I just want to second what Aliana said about the importance of preserving family history. A lot of our families are immigrants in this country, not all of them, but for all of us, over time, it becomes harder and harder to grasp onto our ancestors' experiences as they move farther back. And I think in this culture, we live in a culture that's becoming increasingly focused on consumption, right? Which is just very temporary. It's increasingly focused on short little blips of content, social media, even the news is getting faster and faster paced. And I think when we do that, we lose the soul in a way of our culture, because being able to really sit with something and reflect on it in a profound way that we build meaningful connections. I never knew my grandparents, certainly not my great grandparents. I wish that I had, but for various reasons that wasn't possible. And, you know, I would give anything now to have more documentation of their lives. And we have the ability now to be able to really capture and pass on to future generations, or hold for ourselves in the future, an incredible relationship and connection with people that won't be here forever. As a documentary filmmaker, I can say that I can only work with what I can put on screen. So there might be a subject that I'm fascinated by that somebody has written about, but if it's not documented visually or through audio, I can't really make a film about it. Home movies, for instance, Betty's husband had shot dozens and dozens of home movies on 8mm film, going all the way back to the 40s, and hundreds of slides that were shot on Kodachrome. And I'm sure he was just shooting a lot of this material as sort of little mementos of the kids as they were growing and things of that nature. But now, looking back at a home movie of Betty and her husband Mel getting married in the early 40s, and this huge outpouring of the Black community in the Bay Area showing up because they were people that had already a really important role, that's a window into our society that connects me and anyone I can share it with to an important piece that informs our lives, but we're not always aware of it. That's the thing about history, is It absolutely impacts us in a really tangible way. Many times we're not actually conscious of that because we don't have something tangible to show us the way that it's actually impacting our lives. For me, storytelling and really a deep dive into storytelling is what gives me meaning. I think it's what gives us as a society meaning. And I think the lack of that in part contributes to some of the political and social problems that we're having now at this time, because if we don't have a really profound, meaningful understanding and connection to where we're coming from, it's easy to manipulate people into directions that I don't agree with, and I know a lot of us probably don't. So capture those things, document them, treasure them, you know, preserve them. It's more valuable than any of us realize in the moment.
I mean, I'm holding all of this. It feels like I'm being beamed up with just so much inspiration and so many great little nuggets throughout your guys' responses thus far. The response to that previous question, you talked about how fast the world was moving, right? Insatiable appetite for any kind of media, the way that we operate. And, you know, when we are moving into that inevitable adulthood or older adulthood, and we see our older generations having to slow down in a world that's moving so fast. When I think of Betty's later years to a degree, when the world is speeding up and the inevitables of life are telling you you need to slow down, her life seemed to segue into a whole new chapter. Aliana, what do you think aging made possible for her? And how did her life, especially as an older adult, kind of counter the narrative that we often hold in ourselves and society holds too?
Yes, I mean, this is a great example as to why storytelling is important. And then also giving a greater context of where Betty was history-wise when she was born. She was born in 1921. So when we want to talk about the Betty that we know today, a lot of that Betty, there was no space for that up until she was in her 50s. She was born into a world before she and other women in her family were able to vote as women of color. She was given the expectations by the time she was 19 to either become a wife or a domestic worker. That's what her reality was. And so she became a wife and a mother. It wasn't until she was in her 50s, around the 70s, that she was able to fully spread her wings and become who she is. That isn't to say that it took her until she was 50 to become herself. She very much was still doing that in spite of the world that she lived in, leading up to when she was 50 years old and took over my family store and really ran Reed's Records into the 90s and transformed South Berkeley. All of that happened in that area, given the context of the world that she was in. So she had, honestly, this opportunity at 50 years old to restart her life, really. That was right before she became a grandmother. She could have just been a grandmother and taking care of her parents. And she saw that she had a bigger calling and more opportunity than she had her whole entire life. And she took advantage of that. And I think that that's incredibly inspiring. Granted, maybe folks don't have the same catalyst today, but we can still take from that story and her experience and implement it into our own lives. At whatever point in time, if society expects us to slow down, that doesn't have to be our truth. We have to put ourselves into situations to keep growing. And that's exactly what Betty did. It was definitely a choice to keep pushing forward and to grow even more. All the way into her 90s was opening the door to new experiences that she never had before. And I was very fortunate enough to be with her for some of them when she was 90 years old. But it was continuously saying yes to new opportunities. And I think that that's something that we can all learn from.
I love the sentiment you noted that even if it's delayed, doesn't mean it's completely denied. Something that was a takeaway for Susie and I when we were having this discussion was, you know, slowing down is an opportunity. It offered a new layer of dimensionality to her life, and everything that's passed or delayed isn't necessarily lost, especially when there was systemic issues barring her from a lot of things. At any point in our life, it could be health, it could be our income. But reframing what we think lies beyond our potential is really helpful. And I hope our listeners could take away from that. While we're on this theme of storytelling, Betty's voice and stories like these being so documented in, you know, many ways and spaces, what are some ways that, or things that we could do to encourage the older generations to share their stories?
It's a great question. I personally really hate that older folks are often seen as less valuable in our society. A lot of the people that have been the most important to me and have had the biggest impact on me have been folks that are much older than I am, you know, that are in their 70s or their 80s, or in Betty's case, in their 90s. And I think there's a lot that's stacked up in this society against older people, people as they age, wanting to share their stories, feeling that they're valued, feeling that they're important. And so, you know, we're up against a large array of forces that can be hard to combat. But podcasts like this, for instance, and different representations of people as they're aging in the media is one way to start to combat that. Because for myself, there's people I see as heroes that are activists or artists or family members, people that have persevered or have made transformations in the face of the greatest odds, right? And so when we're given examples and people that show us that things that we might not think are possible, that is a huge change maker. It's a huge difference maker. So much of what Betty's shown me is that a lot of the limitations that we feel in our lives when we're young or increasingly as we get older are actually self-imposed. We have the capability to operate in incredible ways. We might not believe that because of a lot of what we're told and shown societally. Betty didn't become a park ranger till she was 85. She didn't become a celebrity till she was in her 90s. Her life peaked in a lot of ways in her 90s, and people thought that that would not be possible, and she didn't listen to that. And so she's a great example of how much we can achieve as we age, but she's definitely not the only one. My cinematography mentor who taught me how to shoot, when I met him, he was in his 80s. He was still shooting feature documentaries, sometimes like in the North Pole, crazy things that he was doing. And I oftentimes shoot with another filmmaker who is in her mid 80s, who's a Japanese American woman. She was the first woman to be a camera person at KQED, the news station in San Francisco. And like Betty, she has just seen boundaries as something that you challenge and push through. And that's something to really keep in mind. So on one level, something like this podcast, the film that Aliana and I are making, are great ways to show that there's value. But I think also, as I was saying before, we don't know exactly how the stories that we tell as we age, or even when we're younger, how they're gonna have an impact down the line. Betty's husband, Mel, who shot those 8mm home movies, probably never would have imagined that that's gonna appear in a documentary film 60, 70, 80 years later after he's already passed. But I couldn't make a personal story about that family during the early period in their life unless I had that content. We can only sit and watch somebody talking on screen for a limited amount of time, but when you have this window into their experiences, it's incredible. So I would just urge people, even when it doesn't feel like it's relevant or it matters, document what's going on in any way that you can. The power of photographs are incredible. The power of the written word or audio tapes are incredible. And especially the more that you can document any experiences in a way that will viscerally connect with audiences beyond just the written word, I think are really impactful. I'll just give one quick anecdote. So eventually, after I had discovered some of the things that were hidden away in like baskets and boxes in her office, these incredible gems, I started going through like everything I could find in her apartment. And one of them was an old format VHS tape that I got digitized. And it was a conversation that Betty had in the 1970s with Betty's second husband and Betty's father, Dorson Charbonnet, who was born in New Orleans, a Creole man who had passed maybe in the early 80s. And so Betty hadn't seen him for decades, and I found that and digitized it and showed it to her. And to see her father and to hear his voice is such a powerful thing. So like a letter from him is incredible. It's so different to see him and to hear his voice. And so any ways that you can document your experiences, we never know, but it could potentially be something that is actually hugely impactful down the line.
I got the chills from thinking about that. it speaks volumes. Again, that ties into some of the elements of the question. You know, how can we be better listeners? It took an attentiveness. I'm gonna dig a little deeper, and it took her listening to her own cues. I think this is important to record. This might not even be useful. That could speak from her essence as a person to a degree. A lot of people like to make it about them, but this was almost a gift that kept giving year after year after year. When I think about the stories that we are often told and the elements that you spoke of, how Betty talked about her personal life, her wins, her struggles, her life as a Black woman navigating one of the most underreported on migrations of the time from the South to California, living in Walnut Creek. What do you think we gain, Black folks, people of color especially, when we tell stories that show the full picture of the person beyond the identification of struggle? And, you know, Betty wasn't just documenting these stories just to tell her plight. She was sharing from an assets-based place and for longevity and history and beauty purposes. How do you all feel about that?
I personally feel very strongly about it. I know that that was my grandmother's main goal and purpose in her role at the Park Service was giving a holistic, inclusive narrative of the home front efforts in the Bay Area, including, Black folks, Asian folks, Mexican, Native American. To even go further to your point, in terms of holistically knowing these characters, not just for their struggles, it's so important in terms of using storytelling as a tool for empathy, giving a holistic approach of telling people's stories down to their relatable bits to their non-relatable bits. It's so important for us to identify with characters and understanding their humanness. Then understanding the hardships that context that they've gone through, and knowing that these are just people going through it, and by extension, transforming how we feel about the situation. Also, kind of ringing to the importance of our elders sharing our stories. One thing that I kept thinking about was the fact that younger folks, we don't really have a good sense of what time means. I'm just barely understanding what 10 years really means. I'm 29 years old. I've barely lived 3 decades, and my grandmother has lived over 10. Knowing how much history has happened in her span and contextualizing that, and knowing things like segregation was not that long ago. That was even in my mother's era and generation. Sitting with that and then letting that inform how you view the world and other things like that, that's so important. That's such a valuable tool, especially for people of color, women who have not been in the center of history. Being able to see your story, yourself, your history, and understanding it through storytelling and having that being told on a larger scale is so beneficial to everybody, not just the people who look like you, but people who don't, so they can empathize with your history even more. And that's something that we as a country have been struggling to really agree on the importance of that, but there's so much growth. And I know my grandmother has said it over and over again, the way that we can grow as a society is through really looking at all of our histories and really coming together and having a more informed, holistic solution that will benefit everybody moving forward. Continuing to go down that very narrow path of what has been traditionally told and traditionally prioritized is only going to continue the ongoing issues, that I continue to face in my life, that my grandmother has faced her whole entire life, that my great-great-great-grandmother, who was born into slavery, had faced her whole entire life. There's just so much to learn from our elders, and they're people who sit at our dinner table. It's really not inaccessible to really interact with our elders and vice versa.
I think of all the times I tried to sneak my little phone recording my grandma when she was having a conversation. And it brings back a lot of wholesome memories for me just hearing her tell stories of when she was back in Georgia and when my grandmother was running the French Quarter in New Orleans doing God knows what at that time. I'm again beaming with your responses. something that I heard echo on both of your responses was this element of the holistic storytelling and not like collecting stories, but archiving of these stories. Brian, you touched on it briefly, the many mediums that we can begin documenting. If someone, whether it's an older adult or you are an older adult yourself, how do you advise people, or what's a good place to begin this holistic view of documenting these stories?
Yeah, I would say that capturing moments on your phone, capturing all the little slivers that you can get is good, but sometimes you lose your phone or it gets broken, and if things aren't backed up properly, everything you've copied is gone, everything you've documented is gone. And then another thing that becomes a challenge as you start to create archives of long periods of the past, long lives, is going through all of this material, sorting it, and making sense of it. So documenting it is the first step in the process. The next step is organizing it, sorting it, and preserving it. People will record things on their phone, then they'll never look at it again, and it's a waste of time. Like you maybe didn't even experience that moment as fully because you're staring at your screen, and then that's it, and it's actually really pointless. So, if there are moments that you feel it's important to preserve, I would encourage people to record those again in the most tangible and visceral way you can get them, because that's what speaks to us most powerfully down the line. There's something about being able to look or hear something from the past, either recent or distant. All of us get goosebumps when it happens. It impacts us in this incredible way because suddenly we're transported into a moment that is now gone, and yet it's preserved to a certain extent. So do that. But then really look at ways that you can organize and keep things in a way where it's not just on your phone. If you have digital material, one thing I can say as a filmmaker is one backup of your material. We say it's not a backup at all, because if that fails, everything is gone. So you only really have a backup when you have two copies of something. I would just encourage you to do that. For photographs, keep them somewhere where they won't be destroyed by the climate or moisture over time. If you can digitize them, do that, and really just think about how you're going to organize and preserve these things. So if you or somebody else down the line wants to go back to them, they're accessible and they're safe by being backed up in at least a few locations.
Thank you. Thank you. Aliana, did you want to add anything before I pass it back on to Susie for the remainder?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that first step is just finding somebody to talk to. Finding somebody not in your generation to talk to, someone older, someone younger, whether that is a family member or not. Brian was not a part of my family 10 years ago, and now he's been asking my family questions for the past 10 years, and he spends Thanksgiving and Christmas with us. So, it doesn't even necessarily have to be people that you're related to, anyone in your community. It's so valuable to start the conversation. I can speak that from experience. I had wanted to talk to my grandmother, woman to woman, probably since I had become like 15, 16 years old. Didn't actually do it until I was about 22. And she had later told me I had been waiting for us to have a conversation like that. Initiating it is the biggest part.
That's beautiful. Thank you too.
Thank you so much. And just initiating the conversation, Aliana, you said it so well. That's sort of the biggest deal. And it has to do with the value you attach to your own story. And you never know what the value of this story is. And we all have stories to tell. Before we conclude, I just want to read for everybody something which Annette shared. My 93-year-old aunt and I have been talking every Saturday morning for 5 years. We started out with my request to learn about stories of my dad, which moved into us talking and sharing with each other about our lives. It is such a gift to have this precious time every week. So this kind of routine is also a beautiful way to do it every Monday evening or whatever it might be. Going outside the house and connecting with others and sharing stories personally. And Eleanor was looking for images of Betty and Brian. Maybe there's one which you would recommend.
Yeah, I'll give you guys the website for the film, signmyname2freedom.com, and there's a trailer there. It's about 4 minutes where you really get to see Betty come alive in really interesting ways. There's photographs that are available of her, but I think And I know Betty thinks that this film is going to be the most authentic expression of the totality of who she is. And so that would be the first place I would direct you. When you go to that trailer, you'll see images, you'll see photographs worked in, and you'll hear from Betty. Almost the whole film is in Betty's voice. If it's not in her voice, it's in family members' voices. And it's all speaking from the first person. So you'll be able to capture that and get a sense for that. And I hope that you really enjoy it.
Taylor, Aljana, and Brian, thank you for all the insights you shared and also for the honesty and frankness, which has inspired us all. And to everybody here in the room, thanks again for spending an hour or so listening and engaging. See you next time. Thank you.
Of course, thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
This episode of At Home On Air was produced by the At Home with Growing Older team. We could not host these conversations without the generosity of our marvelous and passionate guests and hosts. Thank you for sharing your personal and professional insights. Thank you to our live audience for your thoughtful contributions. To subscribe to this podcast and for more information, visit us at homewithgrowingolder.org. At Home with Growing Older strives to educate, inspire, and connect people across generations and disciplines to re-envision and improve the experiences of later life. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in for the next episode.